Hello and welcome to the AULC Ministries weekly message. I am standing in again for Dr. Rob White, the senior minister here at AULC. This week's scripture text comes from the Gospel of Matthew chapter 22 verses 34 to 46. Starting at verse 34. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they came together. And one of them, an expert in the law, asked a question to test him. "Teacher, which command in the law is the greatest?" He said to him, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and most important command. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commands." While the Pharisees were together, Jesus questioned them, "What do you think about the Messiah? Whose son is he?" "David's," they told him. He asked them, "How is it then that David, inspired by the Spirit, calls him Lord? The Lord declared to my Lord, 'Sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet.' If David calls him Lord, how then can the Messiah be his son?" No one was able to answer him at all, and from that day no one dared to question him anymore. May the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his word. When you get ready to run a race, it is not enough to have a strong body. You must also prepare your spirit for the race. In the 1930s, there was a famous horse named Seabiscuit who liked to race. He was an unlikely horse, smaller than the horses he raced against and not as beautiful. He had crooked legs and an unusual way of running. The thing that made Seabiscuit a champion is that he had a big heart. Having a big heart means that he had a great desire to do his best. When he ran, he gave all he had with his body and with his spirit. He won many races. His spirit was so big that he gave hope to the people who watched him run. Many people had lost their jobs during that time. In the Bible, Jesus talks about having this kind of spirit. The Pharisees asked Jesus, "Which commandment in the law is the greatest?" Jesus replied, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment." We may not be running a race, but Jesus teaches us to honor God by having a big heart, doing our best and loving God with all we have. Every day we have the opportunity to give our all, love God with all of our heart, soul, and mind. A lawyer asked Jesus a question to test him. That sounds sinister, and it was. This was a Pharisee. And Matthew has told us that the Pharisees were trying to figure out how to destroy Jesus, in Matthew chapter 12 verse 14. The lawyer began by saying, "Teacher." Now the lawyer didn't really think of Jesus as his teacher. He thought of Jesus as a charlatan, as a young man who had come too far too fast, as a brash young man disrespectful of authority, as someone who needed to be brought down a notch or two. That's what this lawyer was there for, to bring Jesus down a notch or two. But there was a crowd of people who thought well of Jesus, so the lawyer was careful. He began by saying, "Teacher," by showing respect, by pleasing the crowd. Then he asked, "Which is the greatest commandment in the law?" That doesn't sound sinister, does it? Rabbis debated questions like that all the time. The idea was to argue your way to the truth. Rabbis challenged each other over and over, working inch by inch toward getting at the truth. So this man asked, "Which is the greatest commandment in the law?" But his intent was not to get at the truth. His intent was to draw Jesus into a debate and to cause him to make a mistake. It didn't matter to the lawyer whether he got Jesus in trouble with the Jewish people, which was one possibility, or with the Romans, which was another, as long as he managed to discredit Jesus. That was his purpose. Jesus answered the lawyer's question by saying, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." Good answer, Jesus. Nobody could argue with that. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. The Jews called that the Shema, and they said it every day. It was part of their spiritual discipline. The words came from the book of Deuteronomy, and they served as a reminder that God comes first. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Good answer. Jesus could have quit there, because nobody could challenge that answer, but Jesus didn't play it safe. He continued, "A second likewise is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. Love God, love your neighbor." Jesus said, "The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments." The law and prophets were the most important parts of the Hebrew scriptures. When Jesus said, "The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments," Jesus was saying that these two commandments, love God and love your neighbor, tell us everything we need to know to please God. The Jews had hundreds of laws and thousands of legal opinions, but Jesus was saying, these two commandments tell you everything you need to know. Guaranteed. So Jesus stepped up to the plate, not once, but twice, and hit home runs both times. Love God. Love your neighbor. Who could find fault with either of those? Matthew, who wrote this gospel, tells us that the Pharisees gathered together. I can just see them pulling into their little huddle, trying to figure out what to do next. There is more to the story, but I would like to stop here. I want to focus on these two commandments. Love God, Jesus said. Love your neighbor. The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. In Mark's account, the question about the greatest commandment is asked by a scribe with a favorable opinion of Jesus, and Jesus declares him to be not far from the kingdom, Mark chapter 12 verses 28 to 34. Matthew, however, is writing after the fall of Jerusalem, which essentially eliminated the influence of the Sadducees and Zealots, leaving the Pharisees firmly in charge. The Pharisees are actively persecuting Christians, and Matthew has little good to say about them. Instead of Mark's friendly scribe, Matthew has an unfriendly lawyer ask the question. Most scribes, lawyers are Pharisees and are committed to the tradition of the elders, human interpretations of God's law. They are accorded great respect, and are often addressed as rabbi. Their commitment to the tradition of the elders brings them into conflict with Jesus, who says that they ignore God's laws in favor of their traditions. Matthew says that this lawyer's intent is to test Jesus. The difference between an honest test and a temptation is that the tester hopes for the person being tested to succeed, but the tempter hopes for the person being tempted to fail. Here the lawyer clearly hopes for Jesus to fail. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? The lawyer calls Jesus, teacher, which sounds like a term of respect, but is intended to disarm Jesus and onlookers with a respectful tone so that the lawyer can embarrass Jesus with questions that have treachery built into them. Which is the greatest commandment in the law? Is not an unusual question. Rabbis routinely ask such questions of each other and their disciples in an honest attempt to plumb the depths of the law. The problem is not the question but the spirit in which it is asked. The Old Testament has 613 commandments, and there is no clear standard for judging which is greatest. Regardless of Jesus' answer, the lawyer can respond with further questions designed to put Jesus on the defensive or to cause him to make a mistake. In one sense, because God gave the commandments, all are of equal importance. However, rabbis speak of some commandments as heavy and others as light, and there is an ongoing debate regarding the relative importance of various commandments and how to summarize them for ordinary people. One rabbi told how Moses gave 613 commandments, but David reduced them to 11, Isaiah to 6, Micah to 3, Amos to 2, and Habakkuk to 1. Leviticus chapter 19 verses 9 to 18 spells out what is involved in loving one's neighbor. The person who loves his or her neighbor will not reap the fields bare, but will leave some for the poor, verses 9 and 10, will not steal, verse 11, will not deal falsely, verse 11, will not lie, verse 11, will not swear falsely by God's name, verse 12, will not defraud a neighbor, verse 13, will not keep a laborer's wages overnight, verse 13, will not revile the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, verse 14, will not render an unjust judgment, verse 15, will not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, verse 15, will judge the neighbor with justice, verse 15, will not engage in slander, verse 16, will not profit by the blood of the neighbor, verse 16, will not hate your neighbor, verse 17, will not take vengeance or bear a grudge, verse 18. Interestingly enough, it also says, you shall surely rebuke your neighbor, in verse 17, suggesting that love is tough where toughness is needed, confrontational so that wrongs might be righted and obstacles to relationships removed. These verses make it clear that the love of which Leviticus and Jesus speak is different from the warm emotion that we think of as love. Biblical love is, instead, a way of acting in relationship to our neighbor, more action than feelings. By calling us to love our neighbor, Jesus particularizes love. He does not call us to love the whole world, which we might prefer. It is easier to love the abstract rather than the particular, to love Asians or Africans whom we have never met instead of the neighbor who mows his lawn while we are trying to sleep. It is easier to drop a dollar in the offering for flood relief in a distant land than to tend to a sick neighbor's needs. Jesus offers no quarter at this point. The love to which he calls us has a face. The face is that of our neighbor, and the face is not necessarily pretty. We need to hear that today. There are so many voices out there telling us what to do. Buy this, they say. Do that. The airwaves are full of television preachers, and pop psychology gurus, and politicians, and snake oil salesmen, all telling us where find happiness. Some are telling the truth, and some of them are just selling snake oil. We need a moral compass to help us to find a straight path through the maze of advice. That is what Jesus gives us. He gives us two simple rules. Love God. Love your neighbor. Those two rules are like a star in the sky, bright, steady, unwavering. They serve to guide us safely through the confusions of life. It isn't all that easy to follow those two rules, but it is easy to remember them. And remembering them, we can strive to observe them. None of us will ever observe them perfectly, but some in this congregation already come close. You know people like that, people who love God and neighbor. You wish that you knew more of them. They are beautiful people, often older people who have been following Jesus all their lives. People who have, after long years of discipleship, come close to getting it right. But I have also known young people who love God and neighbor. How I admire them. They are like beacons, drawing people to God. There is nothing lovelier than a young person who loves God and neighbor. People who love God and neighbor make this a better world. They are like a tree that gives shade, like a wellspring that gives water. People who love God and neighbor are blessings planted by God to enrich our lives, to change our world. And God calls us to be like them. God calls us to become a blessing to others. Some years ago, Joe Ehrman played football for 13 seasons with the Baltimore Colts. After retiring from pro football, he began a ministry with kids. Ehrman stunned the football world when he took a job as defensive line coach for the Gilman High School football team. Gilman was undistinguished when Ehrman took over, but week after week, game after game, the team began to climb in the rankings, until they reached 14th in the nation. How did Ehrman do it? Ehrman is a Christian who brought a new philosophy to coaching football. He didn't think of his job as winning games. He thought of his job as turning boys into men, responsible, decent, caring men. When he began a practice session, he shouted, "What is our job as coaches?" The boys yelled back in unison, "To love us." Ehrman shouted, "What is your job?" They responded, "To love each other." You might imagine that a football team trained to love each other might be a bunch of sissies, but you would be surprised. In their conference games, Gilman was undefeated for 4 of 7 seasons. They were number 1 in Maryland and 14th in the nation. 14th in the nation, in football. That doesn't sound like a bunch of sissies, does it? More recently, Ehrman has been writing books, mostly about team building. That's a phrase we all hear now and then, team building. We need team building in families. Families are so fragmented today. This one goes this way, and that one goes another, and never the twain shall meet. What if families would make it a point to sit down together at dinner at least once a week? What if a parent, once a week, would sit down with each child individually to give the child a hug and to ask how things are going? How about if the parent closed each individual session with a hug, and by saying, "I love you. Stay safe." I'm sure that drug use and gang membership would go way down in those families. We need team building in the church. Lots of things happen in the church, most of them by ordinary parishioners. What if we could learn that our job is to love one another, to love God first and our Christian brother or sister as ourselves? What if a church, reviewing its mission statement, would say, "Our mission is to love God first, and our neighbor as ourselves." Everything else flows for those two things. Jesus summarized everything that we need to know in these few words: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself." If we will do that, we can be sure that we will be pleasing God. And if we please God, we can be sure that God will please us, will bring us joy. He might even make it possible for us to win a football game. But regardless, He will make it possible for us to win in the game of life. This is the Lord's message for this Lord's Day, and I hope you got a blessing out of it. For Dr. Rob White and the AULC Ministries, go out this week and be a blessing and be blessed. The more you are a blessing, the more you will be blessed. Thank you for watching, and we hope to see you again next week.